We've seen the number of states that have access to information laws has been rising. And we see a strong increase of these laws, for example, in Asia and in Africa. But at the same time, there's also major challenges of implementation. So just because governments have laws, it doesn't mean that citizens are able to use them or governments respect them. So you can't just look at legal trends as an indication of how effective these laws are.
Nicole Stremlaw, who heads Oxford University's Comparative Media Law and Policy Programme, speaking to us via Skype from her other academic home in South Africa. She's also heading up a major European Research Council-funded study over the next few years on the politics and practice of social media in conflict. But from our UN perspective, we were keen to talk to her about the trends that she and other experts who contributed to the recent UNESCO Global Media Report have been witnessing. I'm Matt Wells, and you're listening to our latest Lid Is On podcast. That's the quaint phrase we use here to mark the close of diplomatic business at UN headquarters each day. Professor Stremlaw points to good news and bad news when it comes to most areas of media and individual freedom of expression around the world. In Slovakia right now, the death of reporter Jan Kuciak has shone a spotlight on corruption that's brought tens of thousands onto the streets. A few months ago, the Mediterranean island nation of Malta was rocked when a car bomb detonated, killing journalist Daphne Caruana Galizia, who was also investigating high-level corruption. Away from the grim headlines chronicling journalist assassinations, there's growing concern that the internet and social media and the global companies that control so much of the digital landscape are fueling so-called fake news and the filter bubbles, which are dividing societies, both rich and poor.
A lot of people for many years have been talking about the liberating effects of the internet and the liberating effects of social media. And I think particularly within the last couple of years, we've seen that this isn't quite true. It's not necessarily the case. So a lot of the same kind of power dynamics that were present in mass media or in other forms of social relations are simply manifesting themselves on social media. Hello, I'm Nicole Stremlaw, and I was one of the authors on the World Trends in Freedom of Expression in Media Development report for UNESCO that looked at global trends in freedom of expression over the last 5 years around the world. I'm also head of the program in Comparative Media Law and Policy at the University of Oxford and a research professor in the humanities at the University of Johannesburg.
I'll start, Nicole, by just, you know, asking you a simple but big question. I mean, how much media freedom really is there in the world today?
Thank you. Well, that's a really difficult question, and I think it's partly challenging because we're seeing so many conflicting trends. So, for instance, as this report emphasized, we've seen rapid political, technological, and economic transformations over the course of the study. More people, for example, are online than ever before and are able to access more diverse news content. But at the same time, we're also seeing new forms of political populism and growing authoritarian tendencies, which are tending to close spaces. One of the data points that we also referenced in our report, for example, was a recent Gallup poll of residents in more than 130 countries that suggested that there's a general perception and concern among citizens about declining media freedoms. But at the same time, I think we're also seeing trends and strong indications that media freedom is greatly prized and respected by people. So this is seen, for example, in the recent protests in Slovakia over the murder of the journalists. And so it does seem like people are concerned about these negative trends.
So there are encouraging signs, but obviously huge areas of the world where press freedom is in serious trouble.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's quite conflicting. So we've seen some encouraging signs, for example, in legal spaces. So we've seen the number of states that have access to information laws has been rising. And we see a strong increase of these laws, for example, in Asia and in Africa. But at the same time, there's also major challenges of implementation. So just because governments have laws, it doesn't mean that citizens are able to use them or governments respect them. So you can't just look at legal trends as an indication of how effective these laws are.
So, I mean, is there any real point in trying to produce a sort of comprehensive global picture of the state of media freedom and the state of a freedom of expression overall? I mean, given that it all depends precisely where you live in the world.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a challenge, and it's definitely been a challenge in doing this report. I think one of the sort of positive or interesting aspects of trying to do a global report is trying to find the issues that really connect all regions of the world. So the shared concerns, the shared challenges. And so, for example, in our report, we focused on some major political events. We really emphasized the challenges around forced migration and the refugee crisis. We looked at issues of conflict and extremism online, and we also focused on questions of inequalities in audiences, particularly at the global level. Taking the first issue, for example, so I think the challenge of the refugee crisis is often framed as a European problem or a European issue, and their media is filled with images of Somalis, Ethiopians, Eritreans trying to cross to southern Italy in small boats from Libya. But refugee and forced migration numbers are actually largest in the regions that are conflict affected and their neighboring countries. And this has raised a lot of challenging issues about how social media is used for migration.
So places like Nigeria and Mali and other places in the Sahel.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I think there's a lot of questions about how social media is being used for migration in both positive and negative ways. And one of the things that we really need to try and understand and need more research on as well is the very different ways different communities are using it. So, for example, I think in the media there were a lot of images of people coming from Syria and mapping out their routes on their smartphones. Well, that's very, very different reality for people, for instance, coming through the Sahel, as you mentioned, or coming from West Africa, who might be more subjected to criminal gangs and not have smartphones with them when they're making these journeys. I would say there's a challenge of global understanding about this. How is social media making people's journeys safer? Is it enabling access to greater resources? Or is it reinforcing the same predatory criminals that have been profiting from migrants? Is it enabling new ways for them to control their journeys? There's also a major issue in terms of how migrants are portrayed in the media and how marginalized voices are presented. And this is very much in richer countries, which are the destinations for the migrants. But there's really real issues about how hate speech and extremist speech towards this group of people is being handled by governments and companies.
There does, in a way, I think, Nicole, seem to be a bit of a paradox then overall, in that we've never had so much information. Information has never been so easy to get hold of via smartphones, etc. And yet that very power is being abused by a lot of people, both in authority and, you know, by criminal gangs and elements who want to act with impunity across the world. It's a kind of a conundrum in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely an issue. And I think a lot of people for many years have been talking about the liberating effects of the internet and the liberating effects of social media. And I think particularly within the last couple of years, we've seen that this isn't quite true. It's not necessarily the case. So a lot of the same kind of power dynamics that were present in mass media or in other forms of social relations are simply manifesting themselves on social media, for example. So it's not quite the same kind of democratizing space that one would have hoped. I think we've also seen this in the challenge of filter bubbles. And this is particularly the case in the 2016 elections in the United States, where we saw that filter bubbles can be incredibly isolating. And they have effects where they reduce individual exposure to information or ideas that algorithms or social media companies think that that individual might disagree with. So this, in a way, creates these different cultural or ideological bubbles. And there's been a lot of concerns that now citizens in democratic countries as well are increasingly receiving their news through these filter bubbles or echo chambers that might contain fake news, only one side of the story, which is undermining public discourse, not only in democratic rich countries, it's also around the world.
Is that one of the dangers for a free press in specifically falling newspaper readership versus people going online to get their news? Part of the filter bubble problem is to do with people not reading newspapers anymore. They just go to a friendly website which has already filtered out the stuff that ideologically they might not want to read.
Yeah, I think absolutely. That's a real danger for falling newspaper readership. I wouldn't say that it's necessarily the lack of people accessing newspapers, but as you say, it's people that aren't being exposed to these different kind of ideas. And I think in many countries as well, newspapers are special because they're often the platforms and the organizations that have been around the longest, that have the resources for investigative reporting. And you see in many parts of Africa, for instance, newspapers are the agenda setters.
I mean, is there a real danger that we're at the point where objective news reporting, you know, might lose all its credibility, that it might just cease to exist with these filter bubbles?
I don't think so. At least I would not like to think so. I think that there's very much a demand for critical and objective media and reporting. And I think, yes, in many places, the media is increasingly polarized. But we also need to ensure that citizens continue to see its value and strongly advocate it for it. And I think we've seen some really positive signs, for example, in the recent protests in Slovakia. We've also seen an increase in subscription for some newspapers since the 2016 elections. So there are some strong demands that people really do appreciate the value of the media and objective reporting.
Now, that Slovakian case that you just mentioned, I mean, that was obviously a particularly brutal assassination, if you like, of a journalist. And there do seem to be some hugely worrying developments overall in the number of threats and assassinations of journalists. You think, apart from the Slovakia case, you think of the recent Malta case too, and of course, Mexico.
No, I think it is definitely a challenge. And I'm speaking to you from South Africa right now. And I do wonder sometimes why South Africa has not suffered from the same type of violence against journalists. So, for instance, here there's been violence towards politicians, but not journalists. And I'm not really sure what the answer is, but I do think that globally, the narrative towards journalists is changing. I think this is very concerning. And it's partly because of the fake news campaign that we see so clearly in the US and the intentional efforts on the part of some politicians, at least, to raise suspicion and attempt to undermine and discredit the important role of the media. And this is really undermining the media. And I think it's creating an environment where some people in power think that it's okay to target journalists. But on the positive side, again, I think in some places we do see people rebelling and pushing back to this. So in Slovakia, where we've seen the largest protests since the fall of communism, there have been calls for international involvement investigating the murder of the journalists. And we've seen recently that the four top officials there have been forced to resign, including the Minister of Interior. So people are definitely speaking out. And this will really be the most important factor if we try and reverse this trend, if citizens really value the role of journalists and force government and leaders to do so as well.
I mean, without being too pessimistic, I mean, isn't there, you know, a huge problem also with just organized crime?
Yeah, I think international organized crime is definitely an issue. And we have seen over the period of the World Trends Report covered, we have seen an increase of assassinations of journalists. So the Arab region, for example, faces the highest rates of abduction and torture, most notably from insurgent groups. We have seen a slight decline in journalist deaths in Africa from a peak in 2012, while we've seen an increase in Latin America and the Caribbean. So this is definitely an area that UNESCO has been contributing a lot to. And so there's been a lot of data and research collected by UNESCO fostering advocacy around this issue. The challenge, I think, also is very much that journalists are targeted in conflict areas. And it's a difficult and sensitive issue to mention, but in many contexts, journalists are also implicated in very much a part of the conflict.
And are they being implicated kind of more and more? Is this a worrying trend?
It's always been a reality of conflict. So in many conflicts, you see local actors, external actors sponsoring their own media, warlords having their own radio stations. And so the line in some cases between journalists and active actors in the conflict becomes very blurry. And this in no way should undermine the very real challenges that many journalists face regarding safety in conflict situations. But there's always been the misuse of media and propaganda in conflict.
Are there key trends that we should be aware of in terms of the developing world? Maybe we could talk specifically about Africa. And, you know, you think of South Africa recently, in Zimbabwe and Kenya, where there have been major
political transitions where journalism's, you know, obviously had to tread carefully in terms of how it covered these transitions and the consequences of sometimes of not producing the stories that various political leaders might want to read or hear.
Sure, yeah. I think one of the major challenges in Africa is going to be this issue of connectivity. And here the UN has been very outspoken on this, urging universal internet access by 2020, which is a great thing. But I think there's very serious questions about who's driving connectivity on the continent. What is the role of large international companies such as Facebook and Google? And what are the implications that connectivity will have on different communities? So how can an increase of internet access actually be a force for good rather than reinforcing inequalities, which we've seen in some cases? And how will internet access have an effect on some of the ongoing conflicts? What are the potential implications for exacerbating violence? And I think this is a major question and issue that we've seen recently in Myanmar, around many individuals are starting to come out and saying, well, there's been a significant rise of hate speech on Facebook, and this is very much played into the ongoing conflict. Or, for instance, in undermining democracy, as we've seen recently in the U.S. And so the role of social media in elections and potential election-related violence in Africa is a major issue. I think we also need to try and make sure that countries such as South Africa and Kenya and Nigeria and Ethiopia and others have louder voices when it comes to internet policymaking and internet governance. So there's been some efforts to try and initiatives to try and support this, but there could definitely be more to try and create a stronger African presence, policymaking processes.
And is there a role there for the UN and UNESCO in particular to try and make media more equitable in terms of access and in terms of ameliorating some of these negative effects that you just mentioned?
I think absolutely. It's been pioneering in creating a space for dialogue and for conversation about this. And I think the United Nations, representing all of the interests of its member states, can really have a role in also examining and overseeing what some of these social media companies are doing, particularly in the developing world where their actions might be under less scrutiny. So I think social media companies are extremely powerful right now, and they're very much involved in policymaking. And this is a space where the UN can also interact and try and encourage not only governments, but also corporations doing better. I think also returning to this issue of access, since the UN has been really pioneering these efforts to increase internet accessibility and access and even promoting it as a human right, there's very serious questions of inequalities that have to be addressed. So it's about inequalities include also late access to the internet in local languages. There's been a lot of hype around the role of the internet in reducing economic divides or promoting economic development, where I would actually argue that a lot of the research evidence is a bit more ambiguous on this. We just crossed the threshold of 50% of people in the world online. If the next 50% of the people are largely in rural and poorer communities, who is going to speak up for them and who is going to also reflect and represent their interests? So I think we need more research and understanding about the impact of the internet on these communities. So this reflects, for instance, the use of hate speech, the use of social media in violent conflict, as well as the ways in which different governments or political actors might be manipulating social media for their own interests.
Nicole Stremlaw of Oxford University's Programme in Comparative Media Law and Policy and a humanities professor at the University of Johannesburg. She was one of the lead authors for the latest UN Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, or UNESCO, report on world trends in freedom of expression and the media. You've been listening to The Lid Is On from UN News. Please visit our multimedia site at news.un.org for lots of incisive content, including plenty more podcasts, of course. I'm Matt Wells. Thanks for listening.